Good day to you, and welcome to a new spin-off, if you will, of Then and Now. I'm your host, John Shomo, and we will call this one the fifth quarter, and we will be broadcasting during the college football season, which begins here this coming weekend, August 24th. We'll look back at games from the prior weekend, as well as preview a few key matchups for the upcoming week. We'll also address and follow the many significant changes to the sport and issues that may arise from them, and of course, any events that occur during the season that are noteworthy. We should call this, speaking of changes, we should just call this episode Changes with apologies to the late, great David Bowie. The changes to the sport, those of you that follow the sport understand that this is a really brave new world in the sport of college football. There are so many major shifts coming into the 2024 season that I thought it would be good on the introductory episode of the fifth quarter just to go over those changes, how they came about, and what they mean, perhaps. The number one change, I think the one that most fans and people are going to be talking about and already are, is the move from a four-team playoff to a 12-team playoff this coming season. It will happen this year and in the 2024 season. The top four conference champions, which will presumably be the Power Four conference champions, more about that when we talk about changes, will receive a first-round bye. So the champions of the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 will get a first-round bye. The fifth-ranked conference champion, which will be the next highest rank according to the College Football Playoff Committee from the other five conferences from the group of five, will get an automatic bid into the tournament. Not an automatic seed, but an automatic bid. The other seven teams will be at-large teams, teams that did not win a conference championship, and will be chosen by the CFP committee, which currently, and this is a factor in some things, is headed up by the University of Michigan's athletic director, Wade Manuel. That's interesting regarding some other stuff that's going on. In the first round of the new 12-team playoff, which will be 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11, 7 versus 10, and 8 versus 9, the games will be held one on December 19th, which is a Friday, and three on December 20th, which is a Saturday, at campus sites, at the site of the better-seeded team, if you will. So number 5 will host number 12, and so on. Winners of those four games will then face the four conference championship teams that were seeded 1 through 4 in the second round, which will be held in traditional bowl games. This year, one will be the evening of December 31st. That will be the Fiesta Bowl. And three will be on New Year's Day, the Peach Bowl at 1 o'clock, the Rose Bowl following, and the Sugar Bowl following that in their traditional time slots. The semifinals will then be played on January 9th and 10th in the Orange and Cotton Bowls. And then the championship game pitting the two survivors, if you will be January 20th, Martin Luther King Day, Inauguration Day, what a day that'll be, at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. So there you have it. It's a 12-team playoff up from four. There still will be a college football playoff committee. They still will deliberate on how to rank the teams. That certainly didn't go very well if you were a Florida State fan last year, but we had some controversy there. But that doesn't change. The number of teams changes, and the setup and structure of the playoff will be very different. Notre Dame, by the way, for those of you who are Notre Dame fans, they, even if they were the number one ranked team in the country, since they do not belong to a conference, the best they could do in as far as a playoff seed goes is number 5. They could be the fifth-ranked team and host a first-round game. Conference changes, and these have been coming. This seems to be the year that everything kind of changed, but these have been brewing a little bit. I remember Tammy and I were driving to Philadelphia in the summer of 2021 when we heard that blockbuster announcement that Texas and Oklahoma were planning to leave the Big 12 after the 2023 football season and join the SEC. That kind of started the latest avalanche, if you will, of conference changes. And let's run down those if we can here. First of all, the thing that triggered most of the changes is there is no more Pac-12, the Conference of Champions. It used to be the Pac-8, then the Pac-10, and lately it's been the Pac-12. Really only exists in name. Two schools remain. It's Washington State and Oregon State. They own all the naming rights and so forth to the Pac-12 conference, but since there's only two schools, there's not much of a league. Those two schools, by the way, have a scheduling agreement for the next couple of years to play most of their games against Mountain West schools. So if you look at the schedules for Washington State and Oregon State, they are largely against current Mountain West schools. But there's no more Pac-12. That's out. That's why the Power 5 is now the Power 4. So where did those people all go? Well, let's run it down. The Big Ten this season, which hasn't been 10 since 1993, but we still call it the Big Ten. That's what they want. The Big Ten will go from 14 teams, which we've had for the last 10 years, to 18 teams. Who joined? Four of the former Pac-12 schools, Southern California, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington. So the Big Ten is coast to coast and 18 teams. The SEC added, as we've already mentioned, Texas and Oklahoma to go from 14 to 16 teams. The Atlantic Coast Conference, and try not to laugh too much when you hear this one, the Atlantic Coast Conference goes from 14 teams to 17 with the addition of historically Atlantic Coast teams, Southern Methodist University from Dallas, Texas, Cal and Stanford from the San Francisco Bay Area. They're going to be putting some miles on those planes, aren't they? So we have Stanford and SMU potentially playing in an ACC game. Well, that's where we are, folks. So the ACC will now be 17 teams. The Big 12 expands from 14 to 16 in spite of the fact that they lost Texas and Oklahoma. They have added four of the former Pac-12 teams, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, and the Colorado Buffaloes. So the Big 12 won't be 12, it won't be 14, it will now be 16 teams. The American Conference, possibly, you know, maybe the Mountain West, maybe the American, possibly the best of the group of five conferences. The American lost SMU to the ACC, but picked up the Army Black Knights. So Army and Navy are now in the American Conference, both of them. Just as an aside, they will still continue to play their tremendous rivalry in mid-December after all of the other conferences are done. That game will be technically a non-conference game, even though they're both in the American Conference now, because it will happen after all the championship games. Presumably, Army and Navy, one or the other, could qualify for the American Conference championship game, play that game the first weekend in December, and then play the other academy the following week in their traditional time slot. I know it's all very confusing. Trying to run it down here the best we can. No more divisions in all but one conference. We've had the Big Ten East dominating, winning every championship game against the Big Ten West for the last 10 years. No more divisions except for one. The Sun Belt Conference is still sticking to their East and West divisions. Great conference to watch, by the way. If you've never watched Sun Belt football, there are a lot of highly competitive, interesting games in that league. They will still have a championship game. They will still have a championship game between the East and West, I should say. The other conferences, let's say the Big Ten, for example, it'll be the top two teams in the standings at the end of the regular season will meet in Indianapolis this year for the Big Ten championship game. Now, all these other leagues, SEC, ACC, and so on, they will play a championship game, but it'll be like that. It'll be the top two teams in the standings, not an East or a West champ. In the future, there are a lot of rumblings about maybe doing away with the idea of a championship game. That'd be hard for some of these leagues to do. They make a lot of money off of it. But do you really want to have teams playing 16 or possibly 17 games in a season, in a college football season? There's a lot of discussion going on right now about a lot of things, but that's one of them. Could you just have a tiebreaker system where you give the championship if two teams are 11-1, let's say, or 7-1 in the conference? Could you have a tiebreaker aside from head-to-head to give one of those teams or the other the conference championship title? Or you just have a tie. The Big Ten had co-champions all the way up until 2011 through their history, over 100 years. I see nothing wrong with that, by the way. So if two teams finish 8-1 in the Big Ten standings, they're co-champs. That's fine. I don't, you know, again, I would have no problem with it. And it would save wear and tear on the players going into a potential playoff. If you're in the Big Ten championship game, or if you're in the top two in the Big Ten, you're going to be in the playoff. So that's something to look for as we move forward. I'm not saying it's going to happen in the next year or even two, but down the road, we could see a movement to eliminate those conference championship games, especially if they expand the playoff to 16 teams like some people are talking about. I'm not there yet, but it could come down the road. So a lot of stuff to look forward to that may happen. A lot of speculation. That's always fun for us fans, right? None of those may be the biggest change in college football and indeed in college sports, however. The biggest change is NIL, short for name, image, and likeness. And how did that come about? Well, UCLA had a very good basketball player back in the mid-1990s named Ed O'Bannon. Those of you that are college basketball fans may remember him from their 1995 Final Four championship team, the UCLA Bruins. Ed O'Bannon sued the makers of the video games, you know, EA Sports and that, and said that he should be able to collect money off of their use of his, they didn't use the name back then, but certainly image and likeness and uniform number was the same and all of that. Ed O'Bannon sued them because he should be, and other players should be compensated for that. He won. He won the ruling in about 2014 or so. That's why you didn't see the college football video game for the last 10 years. They didn't make it because this was in court and so forth, and they didn't really want to pay all these, you know, they had no vehicle to pay all these players and still be above board. Now that NIL is a thing, the video game is back. Players were compensated $600, I think, a piece for the use of their name, image, and likeness in the video game. And for example, I'll just use the local, my favorite team, the Ohio State Buckeyes, have had their NIL collectives. Those are sort of pseudo businesses that are formed to collect money and distribute them to athletes through the NIL system. Ohio State has had their NIL collective spend $20 million on this year's football team alone. If you wondered why all those guys that could have gone into the NFL draft, they had 8 or 9 guys that came back this year that probably were going to get drafted in April. Why did they come back? Well, they got some NIL money from the Ohio State NIL collectives. Ohio State's not the only one. I don't want to suggest that they are. They're, I'm sure, right up at the top of the biggest ones, though. We need some guardrails about this. We need the NCAA or somebody, the conference heads. We need maybe a commissioner. I'll volunteer myself. We need a commissioner for college sports, college football in particular, so that we can put some guardrails on this and kind of maybe make it more competitive. If NIL doesn't have guardrails, you know which schools are always going to be the best. You know, we could name half a dozen of them here right now. We need some kind of a guidance system, and we'll see if that comes about. I do want to look at what it's like on the other side of that NIL discussion, and that would be, let's take a league like the Mid-American Conference. I'm a graduate of the University of Akron, as some of you know. My alma mater is in the Mid-American Conference. It's a great league, particularly in some of the other sports. Basketball is awesome. But, you know, their football programs are certainly not capable of playing week in, week out with the Power Four conferences. What's their funding like? You know, Ohio State has a 9-figure budget for athletics. My alma mater, University of Akron, their athletic budget is roughly $25 to $30 million. That figure comes from the Knight Newhouse College Athletics Database so far, as do a couple of these other figures I'm going to throw out here. 20% of athletic funding for the MAC schools on average comes out of their regular student fees. In other words, you're a student, you have nothing to do with sports, you're there as a literature major or something, you pay your general fees, right? General fees sounds like a name of a military guy. the money, the athletic money for most of the MAC schools, 20% of it on average comes out of that money. Even if you don't want to have one thing to do with athletics at your university, you're helping pay for it. Only 11% by comparison at those schools comes from NCAA or media rights, like the football contracts for television and so forth, and bowl game bids. Remember, schools get money to their universities for making a bowl game. So you wonder why Akron's football schedule this year looks like this, three of their first four games, okay? As we know, they're going to open at the Ohio State Buckeyes on August 31st. They will then play Rutgers at Rutgers, another Big Ten school. And after a couple of weeks, they come home and play an FCS school, I believe. And then they play at the SEC's South Carolina Gamecocks down in Columbia. I don't know what those payouts are going to be this fall. I was not able to find those numbers. But we do know that in 2021, when Akron went down to the Horseshoe to play the Buckeyes, they were paid $1.8 million for playing the game at the Horseshoe. So you wonder why Akron and these other schools schedule these heavyweights early in the season, and, you know, games that really they're probably not going to win unless you're Toledo beating Michigan like they did once. Notice how I slipped that in. They're not playing those games because they expect them to be competitive. In fact, they're probably hurting themselves. They have a greater risk of some of their players getting injured against an Ohio State or a South Carolina than they do against another MAC school, bigger, stronger, faster athletes. But they're playing those games to bring in money. Akron's probably, and this is just a guess, going to rake in at least $3 million this fall for playing those three football games against those three big-time schools, if you will, at Ohio State, at Rutgers, at South Carolina in the first four games of the season. They're not the only one. They're just the one that I went to, and I wanted to use them as an example. So the world of college athletics is in a major, you know, sort of turmoil time right now, and I don't know, you know, how we're going to kind of put the guardrails up and enforce that, but seems to be like the wild, wild west right now. Anyway, those are the major changes to the sport just this year. It's a really seismic change. Now, let's move on to the fun part. There are four games this weekend in college football welcoming back the sport. We call this week zero because just about everybody plays next week. There are four games this weekend. The first one will be played in Dublin, Ireland, between the Florida State Seminoles and the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, an ACC league game, actually. SMU will travel to Nevada. Montana State, an FCS team, will be at New Mexico, the Lobos. And finally, around midnight Eastern time on Saturday, Delaware State, another FCS team, will play out at Hawaii. They finally got there. They had some transportation difficulties, but they finally got there. Now, I'll try to make predictions and give key matchups each week, but being only four games, I'm just going to discuss the FSU-Georgia Tech game very quickly. FSU is like a two-touchdown favorite. Georgia Tech might surprise some people this year. They played pretty tough last year, got a good coach, got their quarterback back. Florida State lost their quarterback. Remember, they had a very disappointing end to their season. An undefeated team that did not get picked for the college football playoff is hard to imagine, but that was them. And they lost their bowl game 63-3 or something like that to Georgia. New quarterback, Uiagalelei, you may remember him from Clemson and last year Oregon State. He's now the FSU quarterback. Will he be able to gel that offense and go up against the Georgia Tech team? A lot of people that, you know, play the numbers are saying that Georgia Tech may be a good bet there. I'm not urging anybody to bet, and I'm not, you know, going to lay any money down myself. But that game may be closer than the experts think. Let's say that. Okay. Well, that's our changes episode one, the initial episode of this, the fifth quarter. You can find it on Spotify, just like you can find Then and Now on Spotify, our regular podcast. So we will follow the college football season rather closely. We'll try to make a an episode each week. We're going to try to put it out about Thursday, right in advance of the big games on the weekend. So hopefully you'll catch on and tune in. We appreciate it. This is John Shomo. This is the fifth quarter, episode number one. Good luck to your team if they're playing. If not, enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.